yesterday was Ekadashi, and Srila Prabhupada gave class. So although it will take me at least 15 hours to cover the first verse, I've been asked to do two verses. And the verse that I'm mainly going to talk about is not the verse on the board. That is the second verse. So we'll chant this verse. I'll read the translation, but I won't read the purport. And we'll go back to the seventh verse, and I'll read the Sanskrit and the translation, the purport. We'll discuss that, and then at the end of class, we'll discuss this. And they relate in some way. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So when I give class, I read the words first before the verse, because that's how I saw it done when Prabhupada gave class. So, and I read the words from the transliteration, which is not the same. Because when it's composed in the verse, the words change form a little bit. So you have to pay attention. Is everybody ready to pay attention?
Kim
tasya
dhulabha
taram
iha
loke
paratra
cha
Yasya
vipraha
prasidanti
shivaha
vishnu
cha
sa
anugaha
kim
tasya
dulavataram
iha loke
paratra
cha
Loke
paratracha
yasya
vipra
prasidanti
Shiva
Vishnus
chasanuga
Kim
tasya
dulavataram
Iha loke
paratracha
Yasya
vipro
prasidanti
Shiva
Vishnus
chasanuga
Kim
tasya
dulabhataram
Iha loke
paratracha
Yasya
vipra
prasidanti
Shiva
Vishnus
chasanugaha.
Ladies.
Yeah.
Word meanings kim, what, tasya, his, dholabhataram,
very rare to achieve,
iha,
in this world,
loke,
world,
paratra,
after death,
cha,
or
yasya,
one whose,
vipraha,
the brahmanas and vaishnavas,
prasidanti,
become pleased,
shivaha,
all auspicious,
Vishnu,
Lord Vishnu,
cha,
as well.
Excuse me,
as well as
sa
anuga,
going along with.
Translation,
any person upon whom the brahmanas and vaishnavas are pleased
can achieve anything which is very rare to obtain in this world
as well as after death.
Not only that,
but one who receives the favor of the auspicious Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu,
who accompany,
not only that, but one also receives the favor of the auspicious Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu,
who accompany the Brahmins and Vaishnavas.
So for those of you who are late, I mentioned that we're going to discuss two verses, and the verse on the board is the second verse, so now I want to read the first verse, even though the second verse has a purport, and discuss the first verse first. I'll read the Sanskrit. Pitu ubacha aho acharitam kim me mangalam mangalayanaha yasyavo dharshanam yasid durdarshanam chayogibi. Translation. King Pitu spoke.
My dear great, this is, he's speaking to the Kumaras. The Kumaras have come to visit him.
My dear great sages, auspiciousness personified, it is very difficult for even the mystic yogis to see you. Indeed, you are very rarely seen. I do not know what kind of pious activity I performed for you to grace me by appearing before me without difficulty.
Purport.
When something uncommon happens in one's progressive spiritual life, it should be understood to be incurred by agyata sukriti, or pious activities beyond one's knowledge. To see personally the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his pure devotee is not an ordinary incident. When such things happen, they should be understood to be caused by previous pious activity, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 28. Yesham tvantakata papam jananam punya karmanam. One who is completely freed from all the resultant actions of sinful activities and who is absorbed only in pious activities can engage in devotional service. Although Maharaj Prithu's life was full of pious activities, he was wondering how his audience with the Kumaras happened. This is a sign of humility on the part of King Prithu, whose life was so full of pious activities that even Lord Vishnu came to see him and predicted that the Kumaras would also come. So generally, when a person is qualified, they become proud. And sometimes it's said that even if you want to become humble, the more good qualities you have, the more it becomes difficult to become humble, because you have more to become proud of.
Janma. What does Kunti say? Janma, birth. I was born in a wealthy family, or I was born in an educated family. I was born on the west side, you were born on the east side, I'm better than you. I was born on this side of the track, you were born on that side of the track. You have this kind of body, I have this kind of body. My body is better than your body. My family is better than your family. My education, well, education is number. Janma. Janma Aishwarya. So Aishwarya means wealth. So I'm better than you because I have more money. Very common. What we find today in the world is athletes today are being paid about, on the average, of $3 million. And they're like 22 years old. So a 22-year-old with $3 million, it tends to go to their head. So they don't even want to take time to sign some kid's autograph who worships them. They're just, it's, that money has destroyed them. They're too young to deal with it, and it came too easy. I met this man who was a famous baseball player about 50 years ago. I met him by accident, and he said he hardly made enough money to support his family. He said, but now they make millions of dollars. And the young kids can't deal with it. So Aishwarya, Janma Aishwarya, and Shruta, education. I've been to Harvard, and you've only been to some small little college in your village. I'm better than you. I'm a Harvard graduate. I have 3 PhDs. You didn't even graduate high school. You're working at McDonald's. I'm in charge of the Department of Economics at Harvard. So who's better? Obviously I am. Janma Aishwarya Shruta Srivir. And look at my body. You're ugly. I'm beautiful. One evening, Winston Churchill was at a program, some kind of ball or something, and he got drunk. And one lady said, "Mr. Churchill, you are drunk." He said, "Yes, and you are ugly. But when I wake up, I won't be drunk. But when you wake up, you will be ugly. You will still be ugly." So this is how we become proud of the body. Right? Like Vasudeva Datta, who had leprosy, and he was cured, and he had a beautiful body, and he said, "I don't want to have a beautiful body because I'll become proud of the body." So that we can imagine, now here's Maharaj Prithu. He's not just the president of India or the prime minister of India, it's the whole world. He is the man. So he's got more opulence, more power, more control, and obviously by his karma he must be very beautiful. So he's got it all. And now the Kumaras come, and he's thinking, "I don't know how I become so fortunate to see you." So that's Vaishnava. That there's every reason to become proud, but they're never proud. So I wanted to discuss this quality. It's something that I have found in my own life and in observing the life of other devotees. It's something very elusive. You may think you have it when you don't, or you may think, "I don't even know what it is, or I don't even know how to get it." So what is humility? And how do we get it? How does it manifest? And how do we know if we have it? Well, I brought a prop, and this is how we can test how much we have it. We are supposed to feel more humble than this blade of grass. Now, I bought a big blade of grass. This blade is bigger than most, isn't it? Just to give you, if you're handicapped in this area, give you a little advantage. This blade of grass, for those of you who can only listen to this, is about 4 inches high. And according to Shastra, we're meant to feel more humble than this grass. So just kind of, you ever feel like this grass? You ever think you're like this grass? Some. Well, this is the barometer here. This is the benchmark. This is how we're supposed to feel. And usually when we become proud, we feel more like the Empire State Building, which is something like, who knows how many stories it is? 230 or something? Right now we have 3 stories, and that building is 230 or some outrageous number. So normally pride means we feel better. We don't feel small. Well, actually, most grass is about this big, so see, it's harder to see now. We're becoming more insignificant. So Krishnadas Kaviraj said, Trinada Pisuni China, that verse, make a garland and wear it. So maybe you want to carry a blade of grass, remind yourself. This is the goal, more humble than the grass. Smaller, you feel smaller than this. So that's humility. And of course, naturally we think, well, how do you feel more, how do you think yourself more humble than a blade of grass? And some of you may be saying, well, why would you even want to? Because everyone will step on you. At least that's the material, isn't it? Material way of thinking. If I think I'm more humble than a blade of grass, everyone will take advantage of me. They'll push me around. I have to stand up for my rights. One time Srila Prabhupada said to Bhakti Charuswami, Bhakti Charuswami relates, that, I don't know the context, and Prabhupada said, they were talking about position, having a position in devotional service, having a position in ISKCON. And Prabhupada said, position is not the sign of advancement. What is the sign of advancement is how humble and tolerant you are. That's the sign of advancement. So that little blade of grass becomes our benchmark of our advancement. How humble are we becoming and how tolerant? So I have a story here which relates the same thing, but it's important, so I'll read it. Srila Prabhupada was ready to depart for Hong Kong and Tokyo. Relaxing in his room with a few disciples, he gave some last-minute instructions. Prabhupada told the devotees that in order to stay in Krishna consciousness, a devotee would have to become very tolerant. Quote, when you become a devotee, sometimes your dearest friends will become like your enemies. Unquote. He gave the example of the famous child Prahlad Maharaj. Then he said, quote, we have to become more tolerant than a tree and more humble than a blade of grass. If we can just cultivate these two qualities, then we can advance in Krishna consciousness. So, it sounds like there's no way around this. If you were hoping you could just chant Hare Krishna and not worry about all the humble intolerance business, it doesn't look like you can. It looks like we have to confront it. So in order to confront it, we have to know what it is. Prabhupada gives one definition in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, humility means to not seek the satisfaction of being honored by others. To not seek out the satisfaction. Or to not position yourself in a way that you can get the honor of others. So as I said, now, if we want to compare ourselves to a blade of grass, what would be a test? Well, here's a good test. Let's say you did something which you felt was praiseworthy. And now you're expecting to be honored for it. And you're expecting to be honored for it by certain persons who then come and criticize you for what you've done. Would you be happy? This guy right here would be very happy. Because this guy is used to being thrown around, which is one definition Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives of why the blade of grass is humble, because he's thrown around and he doesn't protest. So, if I was expecting you to glorify me for what I did, for this wonderful class I gave, but you come up and you tell me, Prabhu, you said something in the class that offended me, and I think it's very bad, and I think you should apologize to the devotees, would you say, thank you, you are my friend? Or would you say, get out of here, I don't want to hear it? That's how you monitor your, that's at least one way to monitor your level of humility. Are you grateful? There was one man who used to criticize Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. And so the disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta were very upset, but one day they were very happy, and they were very happy because that was the day he died. And they were so excited they could come to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta and present the news that this man, the person who always criticized you, he has died. And Bhakti Siddhanta cried and he said, oh, my greatest well-wisher has died. My greatest friend. There was one famous author in America named Norman Vincent Peale, and he said, people would rather be ruined by praise, than helped by criticism. People would rather be ruined by praise than helped by criticism, because it's the criticism that actually helps us, because we can identify some fault in ourselves. The praise doesn't help us. I mean, sometimes the appreciation may help us because we know we're doing the right thing. But the praise generally does not help us, because that's what we're looking for. So it becomes our enemy. So, therefore, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, he who praises me is my enemy. He who criticizes me is my friend. Now, in Manu Samhita, there is a verse that says, the Brahmana, he seeks out criticism like nectar. And he avoids praise like poison. Again, another test. Are we advancing in humility? Are we waking up every morning thinking, I hope somebody criticizes me. And I hope no one praises me. Did you wake up this morning thinking like that? Anybody? But if we're Brahmins, this is part of the Brahminical culture. I hope somebody says something to correct me, because I need that. And I hope no one praises me, because it will go to my head and then I'll think I'm better than the others. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, one of the most evil things that we can do, he used the word evil, the most evil plan we can make is to position ourselves in such a way as we become recognized in the society of Vaishnavas. He said, that is an evil plan. And then he said, another evil is to... Actually, I have it here. Let me read it. I can give it to you exactly. May we ever be ready to sweep away from our hearts by the rough application of hundreds of pointed broomsticks the wicked design. Design means plan. So he said wicked, not, excuse me, not evil, wicked. The wicked design or plan of desiring to be honored above others by the devotees of God. Should I read that again, or was that too depressing? May we ever be ready. See, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he doesn't mess around. It's like acupuncture, you know. If you're good, you know the spot, and when you hit the needle, ow! Because if you don't hit the spot where the disease is, it won't hurt. Right? Where's our acupuncturist? She here? You know, when you hit the right meridian, it hurts there because there's a disease. So Bhaktisiddhanta is very good at getting it right where it hurts. May we ever be ready to sweep away from our hearts by the rough application of hundreds of pointed broomsticks the wicked design of desiring to be honored above other persons by the devotees of God. The wicked design of desiring to be honored above other persons by the devotees of God. So the desire to be honored above everyone else. As we say in America, to be the top dog, which is actually true according to Bhagavatam. And you become the dog by wanting to be honored. God will be merciful to us, and we shall be blessed by the gift of devotion to His divine feet the very day that we are delivered from the evil desire of seeking advantages and honors from others. I'll read that again. God will be merciful to us, and we shall be blessed by the gift of devotion to His divine feet the very day that we are delivered from the evil desire of seeking advantages and honors from others. So here he calls that an evil desire. It's an evil plan to position yourself to be honored, and an evil desire to get it, to see, just even to seek it, to desire it. And here he says that we will be blessed with the gift of devotion the very day that we free ourselves from that desire. So this is a very important point. Now, if we're thinking somehow or other I can get to Guru and Krishna's lotus feet and bypass the humility thing, doesn't work. It doesn't. That's the road is this way. And if you take the pride road, it doesn't get there. It actually takes you away. So, what does Shastra say about this? Well, it's interesting. And I think the best analogy that I could think of is, imagine humility like a road paved with emeralds. Emeralds are green stones, precious or semi-precious stones. So humility is the path that takes you to love of God. But when you get to love of God is made out of those same stones. It's both the path. And humility is both the path to get love, and love is humility. They're both. You need humility to get love, but when you get love, humility is the manifestation of love. So we can't think, well, I'll get love of Krishna, but I'll leave humility out. Well, you won't even get there, and humility is synonymous with love. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, humility is the ornament of prema. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami says, humility is prema. In Jayavadharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, humility is inherent within bhakti. In other words, you don't have it, it's an ingredient. If you mix up ingredients of bhakti, he said there are three, compassion, forgiveness, and humility. These are ingredients which are inherent within it. So in one sense, we can say, sometimes we say it's a byproduct of bhakti. If you get bhakti, you get humility. But simultaneously, you need humility to get it, and when you get love, humility is a composite part of that love. So, this is a nice meditation or perspective, because if we take that perspective, then we can look and say, well, the goal is humility, because that is love. I can't avoid it. That is the goal. That's part of it's the process and the goal. So how does Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur describe humility? Well, I think one of the best ways that he describes it. Well, let me first give the dictionary definition, because he describes it very much like that. This is the dictionary definition. Having or showing a consciousness of one's defects or shortcomings. Not proud, not self-assertive, modest. Okay, so, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Let me read something. You'll like this. Before we go to his definition. (Clears throat) In Mahabharata, Vidura was trying to speak sensible words to Duryodhana, because Duryodhana was about to destroy himself by opposing the Pandavas. So he spoke these words. And he was asking him to become humble, but he was indicating to him how difficult it is to be humble. So he said, "O great king, drink that which is drunk by the honest and shunned by the dishonest." Humility. Drunk by the honest and shunned by the dishonest. Because part of humility means charlatā. Charlatā means simplicity. And according to Bhaktisiddhanta, the definition of simplicity is simply straightforward. As we say in America, what you see is what you get. That means I don't put on a show that I'm something that I'm not. What you see is what I am. And Western society is put on the show, right? I'm not, what you see is not what I am. I put on a show. I make you believe I'm something more than I am. So, humility, here it is said, is drunk by the honest. So honest means I'm not pretending. This is what we call duplicitous, being duplicitous. And you find this in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta speaks of this a lot. Prabhupada speaks of this a lot. Duplicity means at home I'm one thing, in public I appear to be something else. Right? So there's a saying, integrity means to act properly when nobody's looking. So your life at home, your life in public, there's no difference. It's all the same. That's straightforwardness. So the dishonest, they don't want to drink humility because it means being straightforward. It means being honest. So he goes on to say, humility is a bitter, pungent, burning, unintoxicating, and revolting medicine. So when that Prabhu comes up to you and says, when you were expecting, oh, Prabhu's coming, he's going to glorify me for what I said in class. And he comes up and gives me the bitter, burning, pungent, unintoxicating, and revolting medicine by telling me I said something that offended him and I should apologize to all the Vaishnavas. Is that how we take humility? Is that how we drink it? Unfortunately, we often do, which is why we would try to avoid it. And when someone says something to us we don't want to hear, we're generally not too happy about it. Should I read that again? The four, 1, 2, 3, 4. Five qualities of humility. But this is obviously for those who are not honest. Who don't want it, who are not looking for it, who didn't wake up this morning hoping that someone would criticize them. It is bitter, pungent, burning, unintoxicating, and revolting. So we get somebody says something we don't want to hear, and we revolt. How can you say that to me? Who are you? You don't know what I've done. What have you done? But drink it deeply and regain your sobriety. In other words, he's saying, you become intoxicated by pride. This medicine will bring you down. Humility. It will take you from pride, will bring you down. Act swiftly to avert the calamity that has arrived at our door. So I was discussing this topic once with Borijan, and Borijan made the observation. He said that even though in the Gita, Icha Dvesha Shamutena, it begins, we say our material existence begins with envy of Krishna and hatred of Krishna, desire and hatred, desire and envy. He said, actually, if you think about it, it begins with pride, because without pride, how would envy develop? Interesting. He said, first there must be pride, because Pride is foundational to envy. I'm better. So now, along this theme, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he helps us understand another aspect of humility that we can apply. And he says that humility is the opposite of fault finding. Because really the psychology of fault finding is to avoid seeing the faults in ourselves. And not only that, even further, if you understand the psychology, it's to avoid dealing with them. Because if you see them, you probably have to deal with them. I mean, it would make sense, wouldn't it? Like if there's, like, you know, something wrong, a pain in your body, and it persists for a while, then you realize I have to do something. And, you know, we don't like going to doctors. So sometimes we may just say, no, it's nothing, and ignore it. So acknowledging a fault then logically means we have to deal with it. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, the problem is we don't see our own fault, but we prefer to see the faults of others. And by doing so, we avoid introspection, looking into ourselves. And that is the definition of humility. Because those who are humble, their tendency is to look at what's wrong with themselves, not to look at what's wrong with other people. And a symptom of that humility, because of that mentality, is naturally they appreciate other devotees because they're seeing the good in others and the bad in themselves instead of seeing the good in themselves and the bad in others. So if you ever wonder why you have trouble trying to control your tendency to criticize others, it must be because the tendency is there to see the good in yourself and the bad in others. And if you just turn it around, you'll see naturally the desire to appreciate. It comes. You don't have to look for it. How many classes have we heard about not fault finding? 300, 600? You've been around since Prabhupada's time? 4,000 classes? I don't know. 4,000 classes that I shouldn't fault find. Unfortunately, if we're thinking, I'm better than that devotee, I know more, I have a better birth, I have more money, I'm smarter, I'm more beautiful, I've got a nicer chadar. Prabhupada said, the pauper is proud of his penny. I wear nicer socks than you, I'm better. You don't need much, right? Really, you don't. You don't need much to become proud, right? I put on my tilak better than you do. I mean, it can be anything. If that's the mentality we have, then naturally it's going to manifest in, at some point, we're going to make a critical remark, and then we're going to think, why did I do that? I promised myself after those 4,000 classes I would never do it again. One of my godbrothers said he was with another godbrother during Kartik, and he asked the godbrother, what vow are you making? He said, I'm making the vow not to criticize another devotee. And this godbrother thought, that's not really a vow. Anybody could do that. He said, anyway, I'll try it. It lasted about half a day. And he realized, that's a huge vow. More tolerant than a tree. How does tolerance manifest? You don't complain. Any of you complain? Too hot, too cold, too spicy, prasadam, not spicy enough. Why did a devotee give a class like this? He only quoted 4 shlokas. If you don't quote 20 shlokas, you're bogus. He didn't mention anything about book distribution. Kick him out. He's useless. Do we complain? They charged me 2 rupees too much. Cheaters. 1975, first time I came to India, brahmacharis are arguing, yelling and screaming with rickshaw wallahs over US 5 cents, right? After they have the argument, they're going into the market to buy silk dhotis. What's that all about? I think what it's about is we don't realize that Krishna consciousness is synonymous with humility and tolerance. I think it also may be that we may not be honest enough to realize that when we criticize, it's coming from the heart. It's coming from envy. That's where it comes from. And you can't stop criticism if you don't deal with it on that level. It just doesn't work. We try. Okay, I'm going to make a vow not to criticize. Good luck, Prabhu. I got my stopwatch going. Let's see how long it lasts. If you don't change your perception, if there's still a desire to be honored by others, you can't stop criticizing. It's just not possible. It's like, I don't want to say don't try, but what I want to say is hit it at the root. But that's the root. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, when others' faults misguide you, what did he mean by that? Others' faults misguide you. What do others' faults do to you? That's what they do. They misguide you. Right? Because they take you away from looking at your own fault. And now you're meditating on someone else's fault. And how will that help you? It will not help you. Maybe you're a manager. You have to deal with it. Maybe someone did something horrendous. We have to deal with it. Okay. But in ordinary course of relationship, how does that help you? It doesn't. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, when others' faults misguide you and delude you, wow, delude you. What did they delude you into thinking? I'm better than you because I can see what's wrong with you. He says, what is the cure? Introspect. Find faults in yourself. Know that others cannot harm you unless you harm yourself. His point is, you're harming yourself by meditating on someone else's fault. It's not helping you. The thing that is going to help you is you find your own fault, because then you can improve yourself. You can recognize, there's something wrong with me. Now I can work on it. If you don't recognize it, how can you work on it? Prabhus, if we try to hide faults from others, do you think they can't see it? Do you think others can't see it? If we try to pretend we don't have the fault, do you think others can't see it? Maybe if you really make a good effort to hide, but generally not. And if you make a good effort to hide, Raghunath Das Goswami says, deceit is like bathing in donkey urine. So that's what we're doing, if we want to deceive people. But our faults are quite obvious to others. How do we know? Because when you live very closely with others, they see the faults. They're there. We all have faults. It's okay. It's all right to have faults. It's not a problem. And not only is it not a problem to have faults as conditioned souls, but what's really the solution, or not the problem, is to be aware that we have them, and to know what they are, and to work on them. Okay, I have this fault. Great, I'm glad that I know it. Then we get to work on it. So that was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's definition of humility, that you're aware of your own faults. For a pure devotee, pride is so distasteful because it's so antagonistic, it's so antithetical, it's so opposite to bhakti, that Raghunath Das Goswami said, pride is like pig stool. I imagine none of us would want to get near a pig stool. I don't remember. Does anybody know? Did he say it's like bathing in pig stool? Does anyone know? Deceit and fault finding are compared to bathing in donkey stool. And pride is compared to pig stool. So to make the class more dramatic, we'll say, he said it was like bathing in pig stool. That's how a pure devotee experiences pride. That's what it feels like. It's so, because it's so antagonistic to bhakti. It is so in opposition to what pure love of Krishna is that any feeling of pride within their heart to them is just, it's like horrible. They can't take it. They don't want it. So our goal is to see how we're becoming more humble, more tolerant, and more like this guy here, so we can monitor our progress by comparing ourselves to this little guy who doesn't mind when he gets thrown around. See, he didn't complain. How we are monitoring our own faults, how we are not seeing the faults of others, but how we are appreciating their faults. And naturally, when you're absorbed in looking at your own faults, that's where your consciousness goes. Naturally, you'll appreciate that. You feel fortunate. You'll feel like Maharaj Prithu is feeling fortunate to be in the company of the four Kumaras. Because I am so much without Krishna, so much without Bhakti, I feel so fortunate. Now, one other thing I want to mention, even though it's time to stop, but we have the other verse. Let me read the other verse again and quickly read the purport and just mention one or two points, how this relates. Any person upon whom the Brahmins and Vaishnavas are pleased can achieve anything which is very rare to obtain in this world, as well as after death. Not only that, but one who receives the favor, but one also receives the favor of Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva, who accompany the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Brahmins and Vaishnavas are bearers of Lord Vishnu, the all-auspicious. And Prabhupada quotes, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena. Devotees out of their love for Krishna always carry the Lord within their hearts. The Lord is already in the hearts of the devotees, but the Vaishnavas and the Brahmins actually perceive and see him always in ecstasy. Therefore, Brahmins and Vaishnavas are carriers of Vishnu. Wherever they go, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, or the devotees of Lord Vishnu are all carried. The four Kumaras are Brahmins, and they visited the place of Maharaj Prithu. Naturally, Lord Vishnu and his devotees were also present. Under the circumstances, the conclusion is that when the Brahmins and Vaishnavas are pleased with a person, Lord Vishnu is also pleased. This is confirmed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Nishaprasada Bhagavat Prasada. By pleasing the spiritual master who is both Brahman and Vaishnavas, one pleases, who is both Brahman and Vaishnava, one pleases the Supreme Lord. If the Lord, personality of God is pleased, then one has nothing to do, nothing more to achieve in this world after death. So I just wanted to make one or two points before we end. The other day in class I made a comment that Srila Prabhupada asked a devotee to pray for him. So here we're talking about blessings, and in that class there was a discussion, can we actually give blessings, or how do we give blessings, or what? And in a purport in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada makes a nice point. He said, actually, one of the functions or services of the Brahmanas was to give blessings to people. That was like one of their duties. That people would honor them, people would take care of them, and they would reciprocate by giving blessings. And one of the things that blessings do is they help people both materially and spiritually. Like Chitraketu Maharaj, by the blessing of Angira, got a son. But that wasn't his karma, probably, it was not to have a son. And by that blessing, he got a son. And then by the blessing of Narada Muni, then Murgari the hunter, he became Krishna conscious. Or the well wishes of Narada Muni, Prahlad, you know. So we see this. You know, the blessings are very important in Vaishnava society. So then we may think, well, what's my position? How can I bless? But as Prabhupada asked this devotee, please pray for me, at least we can pray for others. We can offer that blessing, that we can pray for others. And one thing that I've become aware of, and I just wanted to throw this out, and we could probably discuss this for another 3 days, but I wanted to throw this out, is that sometimes we're actually in some subtle way not only not blessing devotees, but cursing them. Because sometimes we may be critical of someone, and we may actually expect them to act according to the way that we're thinking, the wrong way we're thinking they should act. So I know they're going to do this. So it's almost like in our consciousness we're creating that. Oh yeah, they're meeting, but they're going to make all the wrong decisions. So it's almost like we've cursed them to make the wrong decision. It's almost like in the plane of consciousness, it's going on. Now it gets worse, and I'm not saying that any of us do this, but it can get worse to the point that we would like to verify our judgment that they're wrong. So in our consciousness, in some subtle way, we're almost hoping they're going to do the wrong thing so we can confirm they did it. And on the level of consciousness, we can actually affect people on that level to make bad judgments and do wrong things because of our consciousness. And just like when your temple leaders are meeting or the GBC is meeting, we should be praying, Krishna, please, I pray that they will be inspired by you, by Prabhupada, to make the right decisions to lead us, you know, rather than thinking, I know they're going to make the wrong decision. It's like we're cursing them to do it. So, you know, we're not talking here about major blessings. We're talking about, on the subtle level, how sometimes we can bring our own God brothers and sisters down, or almost hope. We're almost waiting for them to fall. So, because then I could say, I told you he was going to fall. I knew it. You could see the way he was dealing with women. He was finished. It's almost like I wanted him. So just an exploration of our own consciousness. And rather, we should be the well-wishers. We should be blessing. Shouldn't we? I mean, isn't that what this is all about? Isn't that what humility is about? I bless. Are you willing to bless another devotee to exceed, to succeed more than you? That's what Krishna consciousness is. I bless you. You do greater than me. I'll honor you and serve you. No, I want to bring you down so I can step on your head. And everyone will honor me. That's material. And that story I told last week, or 2 weeks ago, where the devotees wanted to take another devotee to court. And Prabhupada said, if we do this, we're just like ordinary men. I read it this morning, and Prabhupada said another thing. He said, if we do that, where is our spiritual life? In other words, that's not spiritual. So how can we say, I have spiritual life, if we're acting in a material way? I'm trying to bring people down. I don't want to bless anybody. I'm hoping someone will fall down. I know they're never going to make the right decision. So in my consciousness, I'm like cursing them. So then Prabhupada's saying, so then where is your spiritual life? You know, you want to take some devotee to court and, you know, to get this project back from him or something. And Prabhupada's, I'm not, of course, I'm speaking general here. In this particular incident, I think Prabhupada wanted to encourage this devotee, and he knew if he took this restaurant away from this devotee, like the other devotees were trying to do, he probably would have left Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada said, let him have the restaurant, even though it's ISKCON's, and just let him be happy. So then Prabhupada said, but if, you know, we take him to court, we try to pull this away from him, then what is our spiritual life? And I thought that was very interesting that he said that. Where is our spiritual life? So it's a nice meditation. Where is our spiritual life? Our spiritual life is, how humble and tolerant am I becoming? That's our spiritual life. Isn't it? I mean, that's what Prabhupada said. So anyway, these are thoughts to think about. This is not easy to deal with. We didn't have any time to reflect on our own life. But if you want to get a blade of grass when you leave and carry it around, and you know, you can measure yourself. And I do have a seminar, which I did for 8 hours, which I upgraded to 15, and I think it's going to take about 5 or 6 more days, because this is all very deep stuff. So we only were able to touch the surface here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So if anybody wants to leave, please leave. And if anybody wants to stay, then I'll answer any questions. Although I'm not the best person to exemplify humility, but I will try my best. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to ask a question. It's just a little thing. I would love to understand the 5 qualities of humility. I didn't note, and that would be very interesting for me, please.
Oh, the ones we read? The bitter medicine?
Yes.
Well, they're not actually qualities. They're experiences that when we're proud, that's how we experience humility. As far as the qualities of humility, you can see them manifesting in your Humility primarily manifests in relation to Krishna and in relation to the other devotees. It's a relational quality. Now, Burijan made a very nice point, which I forgot to mention. For those who are staying, I can mention it. He said, in Vaishnav culture, implanted in Vaishnav culture is this natural humility that you're humble towards seniors. That's there. And so you see this humility, Maharaj preacher, you're naturally humble towards the sadhu. So one devotee told me, maybe you can tell me. He said there's a saying in the Ukraine that you touch the feet of your superior and you punch the nose of your junior. Is that true? Such a saying? Something like that? You punch the nose of your senior. Anyway, you get the idea? Like, the culture is to respect, right? So you're respecting your senior, then finally you become a senior, and you're so tired of respecting seniors that now you get the position, you get the respect, so then you punch the nose of the junior. That's material, you know, that's material thinking. So Burijan Prabhu was saying, within our culture, we have the culture of humility, that you should honor superiors. You should honor the sadhu. You should honor the senior godbrothers, godsisters. So you may, by culture, by etiquette, show that respect, but in your heart, he said, but what is the actual realization of humility? He said, that's what we want to understand. Because you can just do it, but not have it. And so then if you do it, but you don't have it, then when the junior comes, you'll punch him in the nose. And we see this all the time, right? You finally get a position. Oh, we saw this very much in the early days of the movement because all the leaders were, on the average, 22 years old. So, you know, 22-year-old in a position, sometimes it was hard to be humble. So maybe that's the real test. You get the highest position and then you're humble. And really what Prabhupada taught us was the higher you go in Krishna consciousness, the more you're going to be honored. Therefore, really, the more you need to be humble. The more, you know, the leaders, they have to be the most humble. Otherwise, how can they do it? Isn't it? Right? It's like, because that's the hardest position. So I like that point. So when we were discussing, Burijan asked the question, what is the experience of humility? What does that mean? How do you deal with people? What are you feeling? And I think one of the things that we're feeling, we would say, what is the quality of humility? I think we're actually feeling genuine appreciation for other devotees. Feeling, I'm so fortunate to be in your association. I'm just like in the morning, sometimes when I'm chanting, I'll look around and see the other devotees, and I say, I'm so fortunate. These devotees are chanting like this, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. They're just like crying to Krishna. I can just look at their face and I think, how fortunate I am to see somebody's face like that, just for a second. Because now I can get something. Right? Mahanidhi Swami tells a story. He said he went to see some big guru, and as soon as he walked in, the guru walked right off his seat, sat him down, went and got water, and gave him water. And so he said, you know, I read about humility. That was one thing. He said, but when I saw it, it actually hit me here. Something changed in my heart when I saw this action of humility. So you think about it, you know. Some of us knew a devotee named Jayananda. Jayananda was the personification of humility. There's actually a book about him. You can go on the folio, you can read about him. And so it didn't matter how proud you were. When you were around Jayananda, you just felt humble because he was so humble. He just became humble. So I was thinking about this, and it's really true. You know, if you actually think about it, you know, you can talk about it and read about it, but when you actually see a devotee who's humble or simple or straightforward, then your heart changes. You get affected by it. One devotee told me, he said, my guru and I, we went over to see Mahanidhi Swami a few weeks ago, and he was doing his puja, and as soon as we came in, he stopped his puja, he got out cushions for us, he went, and he sat us down, and he gave us water and said, anything I could do. So obviously, you know, it wore off, you know, that culture, you know. So we want to get it to the point where it's not just culture, but that's what I want to do, and that's how I feel. It's a feeling. It's just how I want to feel. So then I was thinking, now, because the action, any action we take, so much influences us, that the opposite is also true. That, have you ever been around a devotee that's kind of proud? So how do you feel? Do you feel humble? Or do you feel like, well, I have to compete with him? At least I feel like I have to compete. Or sometimes I run away because I know I'll want to compete. So I protect myself. But I was with a devotee, he was a very fat devotee. At Sunday feast, he ate 3 plates. And by his association, I also ate 3 plates. So association works that way, that sometimes if we're around someone who's a little proud, it's kind of like that we want to show that we're as good or better. But when we're around someone who's humble, then naturally we realize, yes, this is the real thing. So then I was thinking, well, in our society, if we individually manifest humility, it will purify everyone around us, not only ourselves, but others will be inspired to act in that way. If we're open and honest and say, Prabhu, I would like to talk to you, I have to confess that this is how I think, that this is how I feel, and the devotee is being so open and honest with you, then it makes it easier for you to say, well, actually, I also feel that way as well. But maybe on your own, you wouldn't want to admit it, because you'd be embarrassed. I mean, talk about humility. Think of something you're ashamed of, that you wouldn't want anyone to know. Something you've done, you're totally ashamed of. Would you stand in front of this assembly and want to admit that to others? That's humility. That's what it's about. And I guarantee, if someone were bold enough to do it, all of you eventually would be able to do it. And if you want to know what the seminar about humility is about, that I do, that's one aspect. So just be forewarned if you want to come. It's extremely heavy. But that's what it's about. But as soon as one devotee does it, everyone's like, okay, I can do it. And like Gandhi said, humility takes courage. It's not easy. You're not being proud. It's like, wow. Anybody can be proud. you have to be courageous to say, I did this. And you know why I did it? Because I was afraid. Practically everything we're ashamed of, we did because we were afraid. We did it out of fear. And just to say, I did this because I was afraid. Wow. What a relief for you, isn't it? So humility is about being very honest and open. And so when we do that, we help other devotees. And when we're proud, it doesn't help anybody. Right? So when we're humble, it helps others. When we can admit, yes, I have this problem, I have this fault. And then the other devotees can help us. You think the other devotees want to attack you when you say that? No, they want to help you. It's natural. Isn't it? Hopefully, I hope. Of course, yeah, there's the fear. If I admit it, right, someone's going to tell everybody. Okay, here's the next story. One devotee left the movement. Sannyasi ran off with a woman and the money from the temple. So Prabhupada wanted him to come back. He said, just come back as a grihastha. Despite the fact that he stole money and ran off with a woman. Pretty bad, right? So one of Prabhupada's secretaries made it known publicly throughout the movement that this is what he did. And Prabhupada was very upset. And Prabhupada said, now that you've said that, you've embarrassed him in front of all the devotees in the movement. So how is he going to be able to come back? In other words, you have to keep it confidential. Right? If someone reveals something to you, Prabhu, I ran off. Well, if they reveal something illegal, you might be obliged to deal with it. But it's just, you know, Prabhu, I have this anartha, I think about these things. You can't tell anybody because that ruins it, right? He's telling or she's telling you because he or she wants help. So that's an important principle, right? Microphone.
If someone is humble, he can never feel abused?
He can never feel abused? I think it's not about whether you feel abused or mistreated or not, but it's how you respond to it. Like it's how you respond. Like she's asking, well, if I've been mistreated or abused, should I not feel it if I'm humble? I mean, you know, there's also different levels of realization, you know. So one realization is, the highest realization is, yeah, I did it, and I'm getting my karma, right? But if we don't have that realization, we can recognize, yeah, I was mistreated, I was abused, I feel bad for it. But what's the proper attitude? Is it to attack this person? Is it to vilify this person to the world? Or is it to some, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta said, he said so many heavy things about it. It's such a heavy topic. He said, it is offensive to fault another person even if they have a fault. That's a very, you know, for a Western mind dealing with that, that's like, yeah, Western mind, this doesn't, that's like, that does not make sense. Does it? To the Western psyche? It's like, he did something wrong. Hang this guy. Okay, maybe he has to be hanged because he did something really wrong. But somehow other Bhaktisiddhanta is saying, as far as possible, we have to prevent ourselves from developing this fault-finding mentality. Okay, he did something wrong. Okay, all right, let's take him to court. He molested this child. Lock him up. But somehow or other, I don't have a fault-finding mentality. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said something amazing. One devotee was complaining about another devotee to him. And he said, do you know that as a guru, I have the thankless task of finding faults? And do you know that no Vaishnava ever wants to be a guru? He said, actually, Vaishnava cannot be a guru because guru has to find faults. So it's like a dichotomy. Vaishnava cannot be a guru because guru is a fault finder. He has to find faults in his disciples. He went on to say, he said, the disqualification of a guru is that he thinks he's a Vaishnava. Because as soon as he thinks he's a Vaishnava, he's guru, he's a cow, he's disqualified. So now this person, he's telling this person who's finding faults, right? And he said, but the disciplic succession must go on. So I have to take the position of guru. So now I have the thankless task of finding faults, which no Vaishnava would ever do. And he said, and here, you are not a guru, you don't have to find fault, and you're finding fault. Interesting, isn't it? I have the thankless task of finding fault. You are so fortunate you're not guru, you don't have to do it, and now you're finding fault. That's like you see sannyasi getting dressed up in a suit going out to do business at some office, you know. And I'm a grihastha and I have to do that, and he's doing it. And I go, Maharaj, you don't have to do that. Why in the world would you want to do that? I have to do that. I don't want to do it, but I have to. It's like that. Why would you? You don't have to find fault. We are all spared of that service. If you're not a temple president or a guru, you're spared of the service of finding fault. So why in the world would you want to find fault? Because as soon as you find fault, you're not a Vaishnava. You see? So it's in our Western thinking, Western mentality, this question always comes up. Oh, but the person did something wrong. How can, you know, we shouldn't be favored? Yeah. Okay, he did something wrong. We have to take care of it. We have to acknowledge it. It's wrong. He did the wrong thing. But at the same time, there's another mentality. Like I teach a course on forgiveness, and I have to teach people how to forgive people who molested them. Wow, that's pretty difficult, isn't it? And how do you teach that? Well, ultimately, you don't. You just have to let them process it. How did it happen? Why did it happen? Should I spend the rest of my life hating this person? Is that what Krishna consciousness is all about? And you realize, if I'm meant to develop humility and tolerance, then even though this person did something to me which was wrong, and I was hurt, and I felt terrible, I'm not going to spend the rest of my life hating this person. Because Krishna consciousness is not about hating people. It's about loving. Isn't it? Isn't that what our books say? Okay, it's difficult. I don't like loving people. I'd rather hate people. If people don't like me, I hate them. That's what I learned on the streets when I grew up, right? So, you know, a lot of the problem is we're bringing in a mentality to Krishna consciousness, and Krishna consciousness is completely transcendental to this. And now we're trying to, like, you know, adjust within that, and it's like very, very difficult. But when you come to the point of realizing, wait a minute, I made a choice to come into this world. I can't absolve myself of responsibility. You know, You go drive a car, somebody runs into you from the back, it's their fault. But anyway, you chose to drive the car, so there's always a chance you're going to get run into. So, you know. Now, I would not tell anybody to think that way unless they have that realization themselves. Like, you know, you can only kind of like let them introspect and say, in some way, how are you responsible? Yes. Difference between fault finding and feeling upset about what happened. Yeah, it's natural to feel upset. It's a natural response, at least for a conditioned soul. I think fault finding is more of a conscious decision. Like, let's say you were we had a big argument, and you went over to the door and you were completely frustrated. I picked you up and threw you out the window. You have no choice whether you're going to fall out of the window, but you have a choice whether you hate me or not. You have no choice when you hit the ground, your ankle's going to break or not. But you have a choice whether you can spend the rest of your life hating me. So obviously you're upset that I threw you out the window, but you do have a choice about how you're going to deal with that. So I wouldn't deny the fact that you would be upset about it, and I wouldn't deny the fact that you'll tell all your friends I'm upset and I'm hurt. But how you spend the rest of your life dealing with me is really your choice. So we have to see where we have the choice and where we don't. And now you might say, well, it's normal that I would hate you the rest of my life. Okay, if you want to be normal, that's true. But do you want to be normal? So when we talk about developing these qualities, they're really extraordinary. They're not normal qualities. So that's the difference. And that's where it gets hard. Because one of the things that I found in teaching forgiveness, this question comes up, but how can I forgive? Because he threw me out the window. And that question, how, indicates a logical approach. It doesn't make sense. Someone threw me out the window. I can't forgive him. That's the logical approach to it. When we ask the question, how can I, we're looking at it logically. We're looking, lining it up. There's no reason I should forgive. Why should I forgive someone who threw me out the window? There's no reason. Well, there is a really good one. The forgiveness is intricate, is inherent in bhakti. That's a good reason to forgive him, isn't it? If you want bhakti. And that person's a Vaishnava who just went crazy for a moment. And that forgiveness is the foremost quality of the Brahmins. And humility is the ornament of prema. I mean, there are a lot of good reasons, but they're not material. But if we look at it materially, logically, we don't find them. And that's when we get stuck. But how can I? Why should I? But what if he did? That's where we get stuck in the logic of it. But he came in and he pushed me out, and now he's the temple president and I'm out on the street, you know. Prabhu, just respect him. Just don't spend your whole life hating him. Just see him from a, you know. Like, how can I? How can I? All the how cans are material, the material within. And when you look at it spiritually, then you start to see how you can. I'm going to read you a poem. It'll answer this question. I see if my computer starts. You have to come to the seminar to hear the poem. It's a really good poem. Okay, now I got you interested. I have to tell you what the poem is about. It's a poem about a devotee who goes to Goloka. When he gets to Goloka, he sees all these devotees there, and he's like, oh my God, how did they make it there? This guy's a jerk. This guy's an idiot. This guy's, you know... He always never went to Mangalarti. This Sankirtan devotee, he was so puffed up. You know, he's going on and on like that. You know, he's with his guru. And he's like, how did they all get here? And basically the poem goes, yeah, they're thinking the same thing about you. How did he get here? You know? So that's the material mentality. You know? When you study our scriptures, you'll see all these things are there. And then the question is, but why don't I see it? And my answer is, because we don't want to. It's all there. Everything that I told you, it's all in the scripture. You know, this like alternate way of thinking that seems almost not politically correct to think that way. It's there in the scripture. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he's saying, He's saying it comes from our karma. Well, one of my realizations is if you take it higher, why do you need to forgive? Because who's there to forgive? Because it's all your responsibility. Like with, you know, but in our, we're conditioned souls, so we know it's my karma, but we don't feel it. Yeah. I threw her out the window. She's not going, my karma, ooh, my karma, my karma. She's like, Mahatma, anybody got a knife? And she's running limping upstairs to like cut my throat. That's our conditioned response. Durvasa and Ambarish. So Durvasa came and apologized because he tried to kill Ambarish. Maharaj, and Ambarish is saying, why are you apologizing? I didn't do anything wrong. I mean, that's a very elevated consciousness. But the point is, that's where we're supposed to go. That's where we're supposed to come to. You know? No, it's okay I hate Mahatma. He threw me out the window. It's okay. I mean, it's like it lines up, right? He threw me out the window. I had nothing to do with it. You know, not the fact that she told me I was a stupid idiot jerk and this and that, and I got so mad. She forgot that part. No. But that's typically what happens in these type of things. We do something, it creates a reaction, and we think it's all the other person's fault. Yeah. All these things go on. Yes. Want to give him the mic?
Peter Berwash is famous for writing books about self-development, like humility and developing good qualities. He used to have long discussions with Srila Prabhupada and became his disciple, even though he never took initiation. He was approached by a devotee to become a life member, so he gave the fees and became a life member. But then he saw that the devotee who made him a life member took the money and went to India with it. So Peter Berwash approached Srila Prabhupada and said, you know, well, what is this? Your disciples, they're supposed to give the money to the institution, and instead they keep it and do what, you know, serve themselves with it. So Srila Prabhupada said to him as a reply, do not make the mistake of blaming the instrument of your karma. Do not make the mistake of blaming the instrument of your karma.
That's a high realization. And then take it one step further. The instrument of my karma is my guru. He's teaching me how to forgive, how to be tolerant, how to be humble. So I come and hit you in the face, and you go, thank you for teaching me tolerance and humility. But that's actually when you read Bhagavatam, that's what it's all about, isn't it? You don't read people having boxing matches, they say, thank you. That's what ultimately it's all about. And that's the hard part. And that's why I think in reading Shastra, we don't always notice this, because it's so hard to do. It's just like it's not part of our paradigm, so we don't see it. The other day, we stayed with Bhaktivedanta Swami till 11 o'clock after class. And he said, people ask me, where do I get all this information about culture and Varnashram? He said, I get it in Bhagavatam. Said, because that's my paradigm, and therefore I see it. So I once had a realization, and I was thinking, because humility is important, Prabhupada should have stressed it more. He didn't stress it enough. But I wanted to confirm that, so I started going to the folio and seeing how many times Prabhupada talked about humility, and I realized he stressed it again and again and again. But because I wasn't interested at that point in my life in really developing humility, I didn't really notice it. And that's why you hear the 4,000 classes about I shouldn't find fault, but are you ready to stop being envious, which is the cause of fault finding? Not yet. Maybe tomorrow. That's the problem, isn't it? Like, do I really want to confront it? Do I really want to look at it. If I do the humility class and you don't want to look at it, please don't come, because we're going to take it out and look at it. And if you don't have courage, it's not going to be easy. I've had people actually walk out of the class when we gave the exercise. I can't do this. It's too much honesty, you know. But we need it, and that's what Krishna consciousness is. It's about being, and then thoroughly honest with ourselves. And then, it's not about, oh Prabhu, I'm so puffed up. It's easy for us to say that. But when Vasudev comes and says, Mahatma, you're puffed up, I can't hear it. So I say it first so he won't say it to me. That's not what it's about. I deflect it by saying, yeah, I'm puffed. What do I know about humility? And why shouldn't give a class on humility? And you're all thinking that, yeah. But I said it, so now I protected myself. That's not what it's about. It's about when Vasudev comes and says, you were the wrong person to give this class in humility. I go, you're right. Because I'm dealing with that I know I'm proud. And when he says it, it doesn't bother me. I say, thank you for reminding me, because I'm dealing with that issue. That's what it's about. So when we do a course, that's what it's going to be about. It's going to be about taking it out and looking at it and putting it up there and, working on it, cleaning it up. That's what we need to do. That's what Krishna consciousness is. In one Japa retreat, we do the 2 days of 64 rounds, and all these anarthas are coming out, and the devotees are going nuts. I'm chanting, but I'm seeing all my anarthas. It was like a depressed persons anonymous program. Everybody was getting depressed. But the point is, that's the process. Don't get depressed. So Gira Swami said, don't get depressed. You're seeing the problem. Now you can cure it. You should be depressed if you don't see it. You think, there's something wrong. I don't see any faults in myself. Something's wrong here. He said, no, it's good. It's working. The process is working. You're seeing what's wrong. You can, correct it now. Yes?
Rob his house, and instead of trying to fight them off, he helped them. He helped them find everything they might be looking for. And, he offered his obeisances to them. And then they left. And then they returned everything to him, and they fed him a feast.
Yeah, the Brahmin is thoroughly honest. Prabhupada said, and they had a temple in Detroit. It was in a really, not a nice neighborhood. And they said, Prabhupada, I don't think we should get the building because people will come here and steal. He said, invite them, feed them prasadam, and then tell them that you can go inside and steal whatever you want. And the Prabhupada said, no, we'll move in the neighborhood and the neighborhood will get better. And it did get better. So, yes.
You made a point that if we are around someone who is like proud, we tend to compete.
And it's only if we're proud that it disturbs us when we're not around another doctor. who has a heart to help has a right to criticize. It's a nice phrase.
Prabhupada just said, if you want to criticize, do better.
Yeah. Sometimes Prabhupada, yes, just do it. Like Gandhi says, be the change you want to be, just do it. And they'll learn by doing it.
Do you believe that sometimes there is a misunderstanding between humility and a lack of capacity? Because sometimes the people don't want to do it. You can see they are able to do, they are qualified to do, but they think I'm not able to do. You know, sometimes...
Like a false humility kind of thing? Like
I don't know what's that, but sometimes... I don't know, many times they are moving because many people, I'm not able to do.
Oh, they don't do something out of a sense of feeling disqualified.
Yes.
To do it. The disqualification that's talked about in regards to humility is that I'm disqualified to be a devotee. I'm disqualified. I have no qualification to be Krishna conscious. That's the disqualification. But in terms of service, there's always a willingness. There should be a willingness. Okay, I'm disqualified, that's okay, but my guru, you know, that's a mentality.
I think this point is important to be clear. You know?
Well, the disqualification becomes a qualification, because if you really feel disqualified, you'll feel dependent, and then you'll go out and do it, and you won't be afraid to fail. So that's a whole other class. We have to talk more about that. It deals with failure of fear of failure. It can deal with a lack of self-confidence, which is different from humility, artificial and an artificial humility.
Good. Like Maharaj, Bhakti Vipunda Swami, he started to answer, reply the question. He said, "What is secular education?" He started from the concept, maybe conceptions.
Yeah.
Because Srila Prabhupada also, he was really, you know, unqualified. But, you know, I cannot see humility separate of guru orders or, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Humility means to follow the orders of guru. That's humility. Even if you think you can't do it. Humility means to go out and yell and scream at the Mayavadis. That's, you know, humility is not just being meek. Humility, you know, what is humility? Prabhupada said that, you know, there was something about a devotee wasn't following the principles, and there was some talk about humility. Prabhupada said, where's the question of humility if he doesn't follow the order of his guru? See? So your guru says, go distribute books, and you're like, I don't know how to distribute books. Why don't you do it? You just go and try. Because you know the success is the effort, not the result. Prabhupada was successful as soon as he got on the boat. That was a success. If nothing happened, he was successful because he made the effort to execute the order of the guru. His success was not that he established ISKCON. His success was he got on the boat. That's the way we have to look at it. Okay? I don't want to keep you here any longer. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.
His Grace Mahatma Prabhu ki jai.